Persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal presents the number 8 tape in this series of intense interest and vital concern to every Christian. Your speaker will be Mr. Raymond Cole.
Today I want to go into the third subtopic. Some, speaking of people, of the last days will be sorely tried because they have rejected God's way. Now these are last day prophecies showing what's going to happen and how they're going to be tried because they have rejected God's way. Wherever the truth is, whoever had it, whoever taught that way of life, whoever practiced it and believed it, some of those are going to turn away from it because the Bible shows very clearly, very specifically, that in the last days there is a departure from that way of life. They did not have faith. They did not love the truth of God. And because they were not faithful to it, they are going to be tried. And by the trial, will have their robes purified, made white, and will be made ready for inheritance of everlasting life. Speaking of the word now, bagon, which it means to try, and used in various ways within the Bible, let's turn to Jeremiah, the 6th chapter. Jeremiah 6, and let's begin in verse 16. Jeremiah 6, and beginning in verse 16, and I'm going to read on through the remainder of the chapter to verse 30. The actual word is found in verse 27. But it is in relationship to a whole illustration, a historical consideration here in these 15 verses. Thus saith the Lord, stand you in the ways, and see and ask for the old paths. Now what are these old paths? God's ways, of course. Where is the good way? That is, the old paths. And walk therein, and you shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. They didn't do it in ancient Israel, and it is a prophecy for our time, and they're saying exactly the same thing today. We will not walk therein. Also I set watchmen over you, saying, hearken to the sound of the trumpet. But they said, we will not hearken. Now, what was the sound of the trumpet? The sound of war, impending disaster. Their captivity, which was coming because they did not honor and respect God. And he said, can't you hear the rumblings of war? Can't you hear the certitude of your own devastation by what you're doing? The curses that have been pronounced? The inevitability of those things which I have pronounced because of what you're doing? Do you have no fear of me whatsoever? But they said, we will not hearken. Is there anything in the New Testament that shows, despite the imminency of that onslaught, that those who once knew and understood are standing in defiance and don't even believe it? Oh, yes, many places. Therefore, hearken, you nations, and know, O congregation, what is among them. Hear, O earth. Now, not only is it going to be the nations, a political exercise, but now it is going to be a geological or an ecological one. Hear, O earth, behold, I will bring evil upon this people, even the fruit of their thoughts, because they have not hearkened unto my words, nor to my law, but rejected it. To what purpose cometh there to me incense from Sheba, and the sweet cane from a far country? Your burnt offerings are not acceptable, nor your sacrifices sweet unto me. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will lay stumbling blocks before this people. God is actually going to lay deliberately stumbling blocks in their presence. Why? To try them. There have been all kinds of them out there, and they can't see yet. The biggest stumbling block, of course, is Jesus Christ himself. They stumble over that rock. Isn't that what he said in Romans? Well, what is Christ but the Word of God? The Word of God which was revealed to us as a priceless way of life. I will lay stumbling blocks before this people, and the fathers and the sons together shall fall upon them. The neighbor and his friend shall perish. Thus saith the Lord, behold, a people cometh from the north country, and a great nation shall be raised from the sides of the earth. They shall lay hold on bow and spear. They are cruel and have no mercy. Their voice roars like the sea, and they ride upon horses, set in array as men for war against thee, O daughter of Zion. I didn't say original Zion. O daughter of Zion. We're not talking about the original one at all. We're talking about the one that's called a daughter. We have heard the fame thereof. Our hands wax feeble. Anguish hath taken hold of us, and pain as of a woman in travail. Go not forth into the field, nor walk by the way, for the sword of the enemy and fear is on every side. What a melee, consternation, confusion, fear, misgiving, apprehension, trouble, and perplexity at every turn of the road. O daughter of my people, there it is again. O daughter of my people, always a prophetic term, gird you with sackcloth. The time when they're going to forget their pomposity, their arrogance, and their conceit. When they are going to turn to God in abject fear and humility because they have no other recourse. And wallow thyself in ashes. Make thee mourning as for an only son. Most bitter lamentation, for the spoiler shall suddenly come upon us. I have set thee for a tower and a fortress among my people, that thou mayest know and try their way. So God has taken somebody he's going to set up. He's going to allow them to invade. And he's going to come into their very midst. Among my people. That thou mayest know and try their way. I cannot help but wonder, brethren, on the basis of what has happened. Because God has said so many times. He said it to ancient Israel. He said the day is inevitable. When they're going to come into your midst, and they're going to be a thorn in your side to try you, to prove you. For even God himself said he was going to permit it and allow it. Deuteronomy 13, 1 through 5. It's a series of texts that I hope you shall never forget. Because God says that he was going to allow the false prophet, that is the true turned false, to arise in the midst with perverse tongue, the corruption of the very Word of God, And he said, I'm going to permit it to try you, to see whether you love the Eternal with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind or not. It came. But people didn't love the truth of God. They loved a human being or an organization. And the people that have left now claiming that they're not going to trust anybody will come out with such bizarre, ridiculous statements as, I'm never going to trust any human being again. How many sides of error are there to that very statement itself? Why don't you sit down and evaluate it? Does that mean that they were following a man before? Try to tell them that you weren't following God at all. All you were doing was following a man. As long as the interest is still in the organization and the man, they would stand up and fight you to death for it. When they finally become bittered and soured and they turn away from it, then it's the catch phrase for all that they want to do. Hypocritical man that he is, the liar and the filthy cheater that he is. It isn't any wonder God has said what he has about human beings. They're not worthy of very much trust, I'll guarantee you. So for 20, 25 years, they were merely following a man. But God says, I'm going to try them to see whether they know me, they love me, my way of life or not. God is synonymous with his way of life. To love God is to love his truth. And the truth is but once revealed. They are all grievous revolters. Is today any different? It's the makeup of human beings. Walking with slanders. That's what they're doing. They are brass and iron. They are all corruptors. The bellows are burned. The lead is consumed of the fire. The founder melteth in vain. For the wicked are not plucked away. What God is saying is that you can try them, you can subject them to everything, and there isn't any positive results. A bunch of calloused rebels. But oh, my dear brothers and sisters, it isn't a matter of who has lost faith in times past, for many have. It is now a matter of how many of us will before that inevitable day. Reprobate silver shall men call them, because the Lord hath rejected them. Next, I want us to notice Jeremiah, the 9th chapter. Jeremiah 9, and let's begin in verse 1. Verse 7 is the one we're looking to. Jeremiah 9, beginning in verse 1. Oh, that my head were waters, and mine eyes a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people. There it is once again. The daughter of my people. Oh, that I had in the wilderness a lodging place of wayfaring men. Wilderness always, demonstrative not geographically of people cut loose from fertile areas of the world, nomads, but people who are emotionally, mentally, spiritually, philosophically broken loose from all foundations. Wandering, uncertain people. Oh, that I had in the wilderness a lodging place of wayfaring men, that I might leave my people and go from them, for they be all adulterers, an assembly of treacherous men. Whom? The daughter of my people. Our day. And they bend their tongues like their bow for lies. Of course, there isn't anybody lying down there now. You can implicitly trust everything they say. Well, that almost may be true, because you don't believe a word of it. And if that isn't reverse psychology, I never heard of it in my life. They bend their tongues like their bow for lies, but they are not valiant for the truth upon the earth. For they proceed from evil to evil, and they know not me, saith the Eternal. Why do they not know him? Because they've rejected the truth. The only way you're going to know God and Jesus Christ is through the truth. That's how he's revealed. So it means they've rejected him. Take you heed, every one of his neighbor, and trust you not in any brother, for every brother will utterly supplant. What he is saying is, you'd better not have any spiritual confidence in one single person. Not another single human being. If you're going to stay strong on the truth of God, you had better look to the truth and not to another human being. Brethren, let me ask, are any of you here today because of other families within the church? Husbands, are you here because of wives? Or wives, are you here because of husbands? Or let's say in general, are any of you here because of your association with certain ministers, yours truly, specifically in the past? You'd better not be. Because if you are, that tie is going to be broken. The only one. Sure, I hope the tie of love and affection are so taut and so strong that they'll never be broken, because I hope that every single person here is going to remain faithful and loyal. But the only way you're going to do it is if you stand tall and firm in your relationship with God the Father and with Jesus Christ, and it doesn't make one difference, one whit of difference, what happens to your mate or to children or to parents or to whomsoever. Because God will not play second fiddle. It's for your benefit and for your good. For every brother will utterly supplant. It was Jacob's makeup. As far as I know, as I look at you, every one of you is the offspring of Jacob. You bunch of supplanters. That's why you can't trust your own makeup. None of us can. You'd better have your trust in God. For every brother will utterly supplant, and every neighbor will walk with slanders. If you're going to be distressed and troubled by these uncertainties, woe be unto you. You're going to let what your neighbor thinks become a distress, and I mean the neighbor in the spiritual sense. I doubt if the physical neighbor is going to be concerned one way or the other. He may ultimately be when it gets into the physical level. You know, when the bite really goes on, and when he is forced to make a decision whether he's going to remain a part of the world or he's going to back you up, then they may force him into the corner. Okay, we have to understand that. If our physical neighbors are forced to make a decision, are we going to turn against them at that moment when we know they didn't do it for any reason other than the fact they don't have what you have? They don't have the truth. They don't have such hope as you do, so they're holding on to physical life, their families, their possessions, all that they have physically. Then you ought to be able to understand that physically. But what I'm talking about, brethren, is what about somebody as a neighbor spiritually, who ought to have the same vision that you do? And they will deceive everyone his neighbor, and will not speak the truth. They have taught their tongue to speak lies. These are conditions, brethren. Last day conditions of the very people who knew the truth. They are teaching themselves to lie. Now, it just doesn't amaze me at all anymore when I read in Revelation that God says what he does about those who won't be there, those who love and make a lie. I mean, they don't lie merely because they're under pressure. They calculate and design them. There are more lies that proceed from the pulpits of the churches of God who once knew the truth than you could shake a stick at. I've heard plenty of them. With respect to yours truly, and I'm nothing. When they'll stand up there, because I've had the people come back and tell me what they have said. They'll stand right up there and make all kinds of lies in order to keep people from manifesting any interest in where I am or what I'm doing. I mean, unbelievable lies. Yet they do it. Now, why are they afraid? You know, the truth isn't afraid of anything, is it? So why don't they just stand up there and say, well, you know, I would have all the respect in the world for them if they did. That is, he just simply would not compromise. Now, we believe that change is all right in the sight of God. We've rejected the concept of divine revelation. We believe that we can progressively improve and grow. Now, this is exactly what happened behind the scenes. It's what I heard for years. But it isn't what they told the people. It isn't what you heard. Because they knew that you wouldn't receive it. They couldn't trust you. So they came out and lied to you like it was going out of style. That was one of the things that deeply upset me. And I made it awesomely clear to various ones. Well, then they had all kinds of justification. You know, deception was essential just to keep them within the body because this is where the truth is. They used the term truth very, very loosely. Until literally, if I had allowed that garbage to seep into my mind, I would have been going around in a dizzy swirl. Because all they did was counter themselves at every turn of the road. They'd make one statement that had no relevancy to the next statement they were going to make. And one sermon would cancel out another one. Some of you finally caught those things. All you had to do is wait. You know, what they said 3 weeks ago was going to be canceled out today. Here is what God said. They were doing it back there. Do you think today is any different? And they will deceive everyone, his neighbor, and will not speak the truth. They have taught their tongue to speak lies and weary themselves to commit iniquity. Thine habitation is in the midst of deceit. You know, I highly think that you had better become very familiar with the first few verses of Jeremiah 9. Because Jeremiah is telling you here in chapter 9 precisely how the renegade spiritual mind behaves. Through deceit they refuse to know me, saith the Eternal. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will melt them. Term meaning they're going into captivity. Who is the daughter of my people? They're going into captivity. I will melt them and try them. For how shall I do for the daughter of my people? Their tongue is as an arrow shot out. It speaketh deceit. One speaketh peaceably to his neighbor with his mouth, but in heart he layeth his weight. A facade where he's just trying to trip you up. Better be careful. Shall I not visit them for these things? Saith the Lord, shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? Next, I want you to notice Zechariah 13. Zechariah, the 13th chapter, verses 7 through 9, with emphasis on verse 9. Because here, speaking of the same situation in the last days, Zechariah, the 13th chapter, and let's begin in verse 7. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd, and against the man that is my fellow, saith the Lord of hosts. Smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. And I will turn mine hand upon the little ones, and it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They're going to go through tribulation. After two-thirds of them have been cut off, they shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people. And they shall say, the Lord is my God. So they're going to finally come around. But what tragic experiences. You know, I don't dare allow myself to think of it because I have many relatives. I have a lot of people that are still involved. I just don't allow it. You know, I know God is merciful. And whatever His will is, you know, He gave them a chance. But somehow, we just simply have to face up to certain things. But I'm grateful for one thing. The day is coming when there is going to be no remembrance of that anymore, so we don't have to go through an eternity looking back at those past conditions. Some people are going to fail. But God gave them a chance. Or He is going to give them a chance yet, whichever it is. But I mean, whatever the ultimate is, at least there isn't going to be a remembrance of that stuff. But only the joys of all eternity. It's been a rather emotional thing to me at times when I think of some very close friends that have become absolute rebels and renegades. But I'd be a liar to say that it wasn't so. And there it is. So some of you may have to face it. Well, every once in a while, a few tears roll down as I'm talking to God about it, praying with everything that's within me that God is just going to shake them to their... I don't care whether the teeth rattle or they lose their orientation or their what they call their physical senses or whatever. But I hope God hits so hard that He'll bring them down and compel them if that's what they are asking for. I'd rather see that happen than to see them ultimately fail. Brethren, it's going to happen. We're living in the times of reality. In the days in which we're going to see these things come to pass. Next, I want us to notice Ezekiel 21 and verse 13. Ezekiel 21 and note verse 13. He says, because it is a trial, and what if the sword contemn even the rod? It shall be no more, saith the Lord of God. I don't want to get into the prophecy of this time. You know, it's the prophecy of Ezekiel 21, which is a distinct prophecy for the last days. where he said in verse 7, wherefore sighest thou that thou shalt wherefore sighest thou that thou shalt answer, for the tidings, because it cometh, and every heart shall melt, and all hands shall be feeble, and every spirit shall faint, and all knees shall be weak as water. Terrible times that are coming. He said in verse 10, it is sharpened to make a sore slaughter. It is furbished that it may glitter. Should we then make mirth, it contemneth the rod of my son as every tree. And he hath given it to be furbished, that it may be handled. This sword is sharpened, and it is furbished to give it into the hand of the slayer. Cry and howl, son of man, for it shall be upon my people. It shall be upon all the princes of Israel, the leaders, in other words. Who are the leaders in this particular sense? Okay, let's apply it both physically and spiritually. We know it's going to be upon the physical people. Israel is going to suffer because they have failed to do what God called them to do. And no one, brethren, has been more responsible for the horrible devastation that is going to come upon this earth than the peoples of England and the United States, in the fact that they have been the very ones chosen to become the seat of this monstrous Babylonia that is being created once again. It's coming right out of the heart of England, if you please. And in the last days, the forces and the powers, the strength of the United States has been sought as the means by which to implement it. We're the ones. The very people that are doing it have absolutely no concern for the small, average man of this country being exploited, trampled upon, abused, and used in every conceivable way. The exact parallel came to pass in the Church of God, when they had no concern for the little man, but they were exploiting him. They were doing no different than the black, diabolical people in this world have been doing, when they laid pressure upon pressure upon you, exploited you for fabulous salaries. And then not only that was only a beginning of it. But then under the guise of doing a work or whatever, they exploited you at every turn of the road with paintings that the average person couldn't even buy, living in domiciles that were completely purchased. What difference does it make what kind of a salary you have, even if it's only $300,000 a year? Only. Providing then you have $50 million a year to refurbish your surroundings, your image. I don't even know of too many well-to-do people that have been able to have private jet plane, fly all over the world, entertain the great and the near great in all the world under the guise of doing a work. It was a colossal thing. And the thing came into being because of an insidious character that slipped in unawares, who spoiled the approach of the man whom God had chosen. And he didn't see it because greed was too big. The image. I'll tell you, there's a day coming, my dear brothers and sisters, we're going to be dumbfounded when we think we know what took place. And I probably know considerably. But when it is all revealed, the Bible says it's going to stink to high heaven. And I'll probably stand there with my mouth wide open, regardless of what I think I know. If that happens to me, what in the world do you think is going to happen to you? I haven't even begun to tell you a lot of things that I know, because I don't think it's essential. What I felt was essential is that your faith should be predicated on doctrine, the Word of God, not on some terrible thing that happened to somebody else. If you made a departure for that reason, you left for the wrong reason. It won't sustain you. But the truth of God is a foundation. Faith in God is a foundation. So he said, continuing what he said here, It is sharpened to make a sore slaughter. It is furbished that it may glitter. Should we then make mirth, it contemneth the rod of my son as every tree. And he hath given it to be furbished that it may be handled. This sword is sharpened, and it is furbished to give into the hand of the slayer. Cry and howl, son of man, for it shall be upon my people, it shall be upon all the princes of Israel, as I said, both physically and spiritually. Terrors by reason of the sword shall be upon my people. Smite, therefore, upon thy thigh, because it is a trial. And what if the sword contemn even the rod? It shall be no more, saith the Lord of hosts. Thou, therefore, son of man, prophesy, and smite thine hands together, and let the sword be doubled the third time. The sword of the slain, it is the sword of the great men that are slain, which entereth into their privy chambers. Why do you think they are privately entering into their chambers? Because it is a mystery. A mystery of obnoxious iniquity. That God is going to finally expose when he removes the lid therefrom. And then the stench of all of its wretchedness is going to ascend, as the book of Revelation says. The fourth point, the righteous ask to be proven or tried. They don't want the inevitable day to come upon them. They would rather, as a cautious, meaningful, careful, chosen people of God, experience the necessary day-by-day trials whereby they could be in the proper relationship with God when that inevitable comes. In Psalms 26, Psalms the 26th chapter, and I want you to notice verses 1 through 5. Psalms 26, verses 1 through 5. Judge me, O Lord, for I have walked in mine integrity. Here is the prayer of David, written as a part of the word of God for you and me. And man shall live not by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Eternal. Judge me. In other words, exercise that investigative responsibility over me day by day. Subject me to various experiences, and let me know where I stand. How are you going to know? By being honest. When we experience certain things, there are telltale evidences. Are certain things happening to us? We don't judge somebody else. If you see somebody else go through certain things, say, ha-ha, what did you do? No, that's wrong. It is not our responsibility to exercise that kind of thing over somebody else. It is when things happen to us that we should take a good look at them and see if we can't learn some object lessons. If we lived perfectly in the sight of God, then things cannot happen to us. If we're weak in our own unique problems, if we encounter or experience adversity or whatever it may be, at every level of human experience, it's telling us something. And we'd better be working on it. So we need to take a good look down into our lives and say, my God, I may not understand it, but I certainly understand the manifestation. I know there is a reason. Please help me to understand it. That reason may be removed. That's why they're there. They are not there whereby we can censor and ridicule somebody else. They are there for the benefit of those people and then for the aggressive, purposeful manifestation of love, affection, tolerance, forbearance, kindness, and all the other applications of God's Spirit for us who are on the outside looking in. That is, into their problems. We're not to judge them. We're not to censor them. And we're to keep our so-and-so mouths closed. Because we say too many things. More people have been hurt by mouths that just can't be stopped. It's not our responsibility to censure somebody else. It's our responsibility to manifest all the love and affection and concern we possibly can. And when we'll finally learn to do that, we won't have any difficulties. It's amazing how the trials and the problems of the entire world can just wash off of our back like water off of a duck's back when we finally have a right mental outlook and we don't concern ourselves as a nosy concern with respect to the problems of others. We concern ourselves only emotionally from the heart. Then we can truly have oneness, a love and affection. Judge me, O Eternal. And as I said, brethren, I think I said it over at the feast, I've come to the point now that I don't pull punches anymore, and I'm not going to. We have come to the point, brethren, if we're going to be foundational, the root, the solid core of humanity called and chosen of God to set the example for others that may come along later. And what if they do come at the 11th hour? Who cares? God's going to do the judging and the ultimate analysis. We all will receive everlasting life, but He may give you a much greater responsibility. After all, somebody has to be called to pay the prices essential for the building of some future magnificent monumental enterprise. And you know, the thing that thrills me is you're the chosen ones to be foundational, providing we can wise up and manifest that kind of character. It's time for us to do it now. What a responsibility. But if we love humankind, we can't care about what they did in the past and where they're headed and where they're going and what's happened and how much time difference there has been. If Jesus Christ had weighed things on that basis, He'd have said, "Fooey with them. You know, I never committed any of their problems. I'm not going to give my life for them." But if we really love them, brethren, then we're going to say, "I would do it all over again just to help somebody else." Judge me, O Lord, for I have walked in mine integrity. I have trusted also in the Lord. Therefore, I shall not slide. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my reins and my heart. You see, if we're walking in the integrity of God, in the integrity of that way of life to which we have been called, the mercy and the benevolence of God, we can ask to be tried. Because we won't falter. We can trust in the mercy of God. Because we know that God has already promised that He's going to allow nothing too great for us. He isn't there to consume us. He's there to make us. If we have confidence and trust in that. For Thy loving kindness is before mine eyes. David said that he had no qualms about asking it because he said, "Your loving kindness is before mine eyes. I'm aware of it. And I have walked in thy truth, which is revealed. I have not sat with vain persons." And who are the vain persons? Not the people who are in ignorance, but people who knew but have deliberately gone the other way. Study what vanity is. Neither will I go in with the dissemblers. You know who a dissembler is? Those that are constantly divisive and trying to tear up. What is it unites? The truth of God. What is that tears up? Heresy. That which is contrary to the divinely revealed truth. I have hated the congregation of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. Who are they? Outsiders that have never known? No. People who knew. I have people who keep Sunday, who observe every wretched, miserable, wrong principle there is, that are neighbors, but that are excellent neighbors. And we love deeply. I can't hold them accountable. God has never revealed any truth to them. But somebody who once knew it and understood is a different story. I'm glad to have come to see that, because now my neighbors mean a lot to me. I'm afraid we had the wrong approach in the past. Our administration was terrible. It was terrible. The ones we're to avoid are not our neighbors. It isn't any wonder they had that application, because they didn't see themselves in the light of prophecy. Our neighbors are fine. Marvelous. And I'm sure that many of you have neighbors just like that, do absolutely anything for you. And it's something for which I do repent, and still do, that we have shunned them in the ways that perhaps many of us have in times past because of teaching. Oh, sure, we tried to treat them with certain respect, but not in the way that we would have otherwise. No, the ones he's talking about are those who knew. And if they knew, God said, you will not so much as listen to it. Have not court it, nor have anything to do with it. Well, in the same way, I have not accepted what the Worldwide Church of God has gone to. Because when I finally was compelled, and I came before Mr. Armstrong and admitted that the Worldwide Church of God, at that time the Radio Church of God, was unique, that God himself had revealed the truth to them, and I was accepting it on the basis of that revelation, which we taught at that time, then why should I turn from it? I accepted it on that basis. And I told him at that time that I was accepting it, and I saw the reason for effecting a switch from the Church of God Seventh Day, because I understood that God had revealed the truth and that they held a unique responsibility. Therefore, I would not change from that way of life. Well, to Mr. Armstrong, that was a marvelous thing for many years, until he wanted to change it. And then they did everything in the book to try to make me look black, red, green, and everything else, when I had already told him that I would not do it. If it weren't divinely revealed, I had the option of deciding whether they were the church or whether they weren't. They told me they were, and that the truth was revealed to them. I accepted it in faith, and I believed it, and I taught it for all of those years. No way was I going to accept that change. And I told him in no uncertain terms, I would not accept it. I said, now, if you convince me that change is acceptable and that you didn't have it, I said, then I'm finished with religion. Because you're certainly not it. Anytime you admit that you had to change, you're no longer the church. That's it. So which do you want? Well, I wasn't about to give them the option of deciding for me anyway. I decided on the basis of my study that they had to be, because God said they were going to change. And so I saw happening exactly what God said was going to happen. Therefore, I knew that they did have the truth. But now they were changing from it. And it was our responsibility to be faithful to it. So he said, I have hated the congregation of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. I will wash mine hands in innocency, so will I compass thine altar, O God. In Psalms 139 now, for the concluding text, Psalms 139, no, I'm going to read about three other texts very quickly, because I just want to get them in so I don't have to come back to this word. Psalms 139, and let's begin in verse 17. We're going to read through verse 24. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God! How great is the sum of them! If I should count them, they are more in number than the sand. How marvelous are the things of the eternal God, his blessings, his thoughts to us. You know, if we could just, in our moments of distress and trouble, remember those things, what a magnificent thing it would be. If I should count them, they are more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with thee. Here we come to in the morning, and we still have God's truth. We still have our integrity. We still have our sanity. But imagine what you could have been. Surely thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, you bloody men. For they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain. Who are they but those who say they are dressed God? They use the term of God. I don't mean merely speaking slang or cursing. I mean those who take the name of God and think they do it religiously are taking it in vain. Do not I hate them, O Lord, that hate thee? And am not I grieved with those that rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. Yes, and yet he said, remember, this is only one location, but he said, you know, what he would do, he would even enter into sackcloth. His clothing would be sackcloth, and his couch, dust and ashes, if he could be of benefit to those that had hated him and done evil and wickedly. I hate them with perfect hatred. But remember, that is not a murderous hate. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Have we come to realize that those people, no matter who they are nor where they are, absolutely are the enemies of God? Because God gave them truth. I hope that many of them who are enemies of God are going to get their feet back on the ground, turn back the right direction. But they are enemies of God. Search me, O God, not this world. This world doesn't know God. The true enemies of God are those that knew. I don't find any place in all the Bible when it's speaking of enemies and so on. He's talking about the Chinese and the people of Mesopotamia and the people of other geographic areas in the days of ancient Israel. The enemies of God were within the confines of Israel. I think it's understood that the others have never known nor never understood. How could they be an enemy of God if they didn't even know him? They're only enemies in the sense that they are carnal beings doing what they were created to do, following their own nature. But the true ones finally say, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. That's all we want. All right, very quickly, brethren, point number 5 is the physical responsibility upon all men. Job 12 and verse 11. Let's notice Job 12 and verse 11 concerning a physical responsibility incumbent upon all men. He said, doth not the ear try words, and the mouth taste his meat? You know, we don't receive into our beings things that are rancorous, sour, bitter, contemptuous, distasteful to us, do we? We like to eat food, you know, that's acceptable. Because a great deal of the enjoyment of eating starts with the mouth, the taste. It isn't the quantity that you stuff down in the gullet, it's the joy of the taste that goes with it. So we don't eat merely to fill up the void down in the inner part of the being. We eat for the joy of the taste. What about words? Do we accept everything that comes, or do we try them also? Think seriously. Job 34, verses 1 through 4, emphasis on verse 3. Job 34, and beginning in verse 1. Furthermore, Elihu answered and said, "Hear my words, O you wise men, and give ear unto me, you that have knowledge. For the ear trieth words, as the mouth tasteth meat. Let us choose to us judgment. Let us know among ourselves what is good." In other words, let's be aware of it. Now, human beings, point number 6, require proof of one another. Genesis 42, verses 9 through 20, emphasis upon verse 15. Genesis 42, and I'm just going to read this very quickly, verses 9 through 20. And here he said, "And Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them, and said unto them, You are spies. To see the nakedness of the land, you are come. And they said unto him, Nay, my lord." Remember, this was his own brothers, and he's accusing them. He's trying them. "But to buy food are thy servants come. We are all one man's sons. We are true men. Your servants are no spies." But remember, they didn't understand what Joseph was saying. He knew the reason for which they sent him down there. And they were not true, although Joseph had now come to recognize that God did it. But he is telling them on the human plane that they were not trustworthy. And he said unto them, "Nay, but we see the nakedness of the land you are come." And they said, "Thy servants are 12 brethren, and sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not." And Joseph said unto them, "That is it that I spake unto you, saying, You are spies. Hereby you shall be proved." And there is the word. "By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither. Send one of you, and let him fetch your brother. And you shall be kept in prison, that your words may be proved, whether there be any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." And he put them all together into a ward 3 days. I imagine they were a little bit frightened about that time. And maybe they had begun to put a few things together about what they had done themselves. And Joseph said unto them the third day, This do and live, for I fear God. If you be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go you, carry corn for the famine of your houses." Now, if you're true men, will you do this? Be a surety for the very thing you've said. "But bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and you shall not die." And they did so. So sometimes human beings put other human beings under the test because they want verity and proof also. The next word, brethren, is the word massa, which is used more than one way. It's also the word that was used, or not this one specifically, I'm coming to that later on. This is now the word massa, also meaning trial. We're going to pick it up next time.
persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal has just presented the number 8 tape in this series of vital interest and concern to every Christian. Your speaker has been Mr. Raymond Cole.